My name is Elizabeth, and I am a grateful recovering compulsive eater. I am in multiple fellowships, so I speak the language of the heart in multiple dialects. I ha can be totally grateful for the fact that I've been attending Overeaters Anonymous meetings for 29 years and have been abstinent for 27 of those years, one day at a time. I will tell you all that I had a horrific week this week professionally, and I laughed that I had made this commitment, like I don't know how many weeks ago, because in my mind this was my higher power doing for me what I could not do for myself, and really set the frame for the discussion today. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about who I am and where I came from, and then explain to you what my journey toward self-love has looked like as my recovery has unfolded over the course of the almost 3 decades that I've been a part of this fellowship. I'm an adopted child. I was adopted into a home that was governed by the disease of addiction. My father was a very powerful man, but he was also an alcoholic, drug addict, rageaholic. And my mother was an alcoholic and a compulsive eater. And so I jokingly say that the problems, the life problems, got solved in my family of origin, in the manner if you walked into my mother's walk-in closet, and on the left-hand side you see a bar, and on the right-hand side you see the back of a bakery truck. And that was everyone's solutions to life. There was no discussion of the truth. There was no accountability. There was no integrity. It was very confusing. When I was 8 years old, there was a series of events that happened. And one night, in a drunken stupor, my father thought it would be a great idea to rape his 8-year-old adopted daughter. And that sexual assault lasted for 4 years. And food became the only way to survive. That was the only way to contend with the environment, the absolute insanity of the environment, and all of the trauma that's associated with that type of experience. When I was 12 years old, my and you know, and as this is happening, the insanity in the house is escalating. And when I was 12 years old, my mother decided that she was going to visit her friend in Florida, and she told the family that she was going to visit her best friend from college who lived in Merritt Island. But when she took me to Florida and we landed in the Orlando airport, instead of making a left-hand turn to go to Merritt Island, we made a right-hand turn and we ended up in Gainesville, where one of my mother's drinking buddies lived. And, obviously I have a little bit of gray hair and some wrinkles. So this is well before GPS and cell phones. So nobody knew where we were. And she went out with her drinking buddy, left me with the drinking buddy's roommate, who was a pedophile. And that night, I got my first taste of alcohol. Of course, it was something really, really sugary and really, really sweet. And my mother and her drinking buddy came home when this man was sexually assaulting me. And my mother walked in the room and it became, "Elizabeth, what have you done? Elizabeth, what did you make him do? Elizabeth, you should be ashamed of yourself. And Elizabeth, you should never, ever, ever tell anybody that this happened." So we carried that back to New York. And I don't know, maybe 6 months or so later, one of my siblings must have found out about what was going on, and no one in the household was healthy, including him. And he thought it'd be hilarious to feed his sister drugs and alcohol so she'd have sex with his friends. So from the time I was about 13 and a half years old, I was trading my body and soul for drugs and alcohol, fully engaged in an eating disorder of, binging and starving and binging and starving, with just everything that goes along with all of those choices and all of those challenges. So it is nothing short of a miracle for me that I can stand here today with, long-term abstinence, long-term sobriety, long-term clean time, and the opportunity to talk about how Overeaters Anonymous, which was the first fellowship I found myself in, set the foundation for an amazing transformational change in my life. I do not live my life the way today that my addiction forced me to live my life 30, 40 years ago. And everything I have, everything I am, everything my children are a reflection of what I've learned in these rooms. And, from my perspective, and again, this is from someone who's has multiple seats on the Titanic, Overeaters Anonymous is the master class. This is the addiction that is really challenging to navigate your way through because you have to eat. You can't just stop. So what does this mean about self-love, and what does that journey look like? I would love to tell you that I understood that when I was a year abstinent, 5 years abstinent, 10 years abstinent. But what I've discovered is that coming to understand what that means is a process. And it's a process that only evolves if we do the single most self-loving thing that we possibly can do for ourself today. And that is not to abuse food. Because the minute I turn back into using a food, any food, as a solution for contending with what's going on inside of me, I lose the opportunity for any potential growth of the skills that I need in order to love myself. So the first thing I will say right out of the gate is that when you think about what self-love means, next time you go to the refrigerator or the cookie jar, remind yourself that you are denying that part of yourself that struggles with believing it deserves to be loved, the love it needs today. So that's the first piece, right? We have to acknowledge that we are powerless over what happens to us when we engage in our addiction, and recognize that we will only get a different outcome if we make the decision to admit that we're powerless over food and accept that there's unmanageability that's associated with that. So when we're thinking about the idea of self-love, right? The unmanageability that we see in our lives. Some of you talked about it earlier, about making commitments that you can't keep, or jumping in and trying to save the world because we're so desperate for someone to recognize our worth and value, that becomes the unmanageability that drives us to this question of, am I really loving myself? You know, it's been my experience, and I do a lot of service. I have for 20 years sponsored 10 people at a time. For the last 14 years, literally the last 14 years, I have run a 12-step workshop. It started in my living room in 2010, because I understand that service is the only way I get better. And the only way that I build self-love is by working to demonstrate it to myself and to others. So I've got to figure this out. I've got to come to understand, first and foremost, Right, big part of the unmanageability that we see in this conversation of what is self-love and how do I develop it is recognizing that there's a small problem in us even questioning whether we deserve it to begin with. And I certainly know that was the case for me, that when I first came into the rooms, the insanity of the environment that I had lived in had convinced me that I was unworthy. I was undeserving. I was, inculcated into a religion where someone stood in a pulpit every Sunday telling me that I was a sinner and that I didn't deserve to be loved. And so we have to step back and we have to recognize there's unmanageability in that. And then we need to come to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. And this is often when I'm working with people who are newcomers, this is often a transformative idea for them, that the biggest thing that stands between us and living in the self-love that we deserve is the narrative we're telling ourselves. It's the story we tell ourselves about how deserving we are. It stands in our way. So, in order for us to kind of live into what self-love looks like, we need to believe that there is going to be a higher power out there that believes that we deserve it too. And many people that I have, been on the journey with over the time that I've been recovering come in with this idea that we're so flawed and we're so broken that we don't deserve anything good in our lives. That somehow or another, whatever power is out there, if you believe in a re religious construct of God, that we're going to be punished. Things are going to be taken away. We're going to be sent to purgatory. So forget about self-love. And so there's some challenges in that concept. The first is, what does self-love look like to begin with? And then the second piece is, why would any higher power that is out there purportedly to love you and support you, why would that higher power not want you to engage in the journey of self-love? So I'm going to answer the first question first, and then bring a little more context to the second. So it has again been my experience that many people confuse self-love with selfishness. I'm going to take this time for myself, which infers that I potentially could be hurting other people because I'm taking this time for myself. I am going to do things for myself, which potentially can be perceived as I am not doing things for others. So the first thing that we have to work on in this conversation about self-love and what's involved in getting there is to look at the dysfunction in some of that perception. Self-love is not generally this idea of going and getting a massage or a facial, although those are beautiful, loving things to do. It's also understanding yourself well enough to understand how you operate in relationships and whether or not you're bringing codependency into the conversation, and whether you have motive and you're manipulating and trying to engage in a level where there's not real clarity. Sorry, I just stepped on one of the cat toys. So how do we work this through? So the first thing we have to do is we have to live in the world where it's okay for us to take care of ourselves, where it's okay for no to be a full sentence, where it's okay for us to allow the investment in the things that we need, in spite of the perception of how other people feel about it, we have to align there first. And in order to get there, the first thing you have to do is work step two. Got to come to believe that there's a higher power out there that truly believes that you deserve love in all of its manifestations. You deserve love from other people, and you deserve love for yourself. Now, I know when I first came in, I know when I first came in, my therapist would say to me, you have the most vicious internal speak I have ever heard. You're a failure, Elizabeth. You're a fuck up, Elizabeth. You don't deserve, Elizabeth. You're so stupid. You are fat, ugly, disgusting, and gross, and no one is ever going to want you. That's the level of messaging that I operated with. That's what was in my head 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, every moment. That was the internal operating system. That messaging is absolutely going to stand in the way of me being able to engage in any behavior that's loving. And I have to reconcile that first. Because if I feel that way about myself, I've got to believe that whatever power greater than myself is out there feels that way about me. It took me 2 years to 2.5 years, actually, to get abstinent because I wouldn't ask anyone to sponsor me because I didn't believe in any way, shape, manner, or form that I deserved their time. So that model has to change. And that model has to change starting with the idea that it's okay for you to be loved. And this is where the steps are so incredibly amazing. So we come in the room, we recognize, you know, hey, what, this internal dialogue, it's not healthy. It is not helpful. And in order for it to change, I have to rely on something bigger than myself, whether it's a construct of God that I learned as a kid, or whether it's the love of the group and the good orderly direction that I received there. I have to take that step in faith, and I have to make the decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of whatever that power is. And the only way I can do that fully is if I remove everything that stands between me and believing that that higher power believes in me. So I come to the rooms. I hear about this higher power thing. I have to make the decision that maybe this is going to help me. And then I have to start working on step four. And I've got to take a look at this narrative that I'm telling myself. Fat, ugly, disgusting, and gross. You don't deserve. What the hell were you thinking? That's the power of step four. Nobody cares what you've done. Nobody cares about the details. What we care about is that you come to understand that there is a level of self-delusion that you have been living with in discounting your worth and value. It was a way for me to survive. Anybody else who has that narrative in your head, please don't understand. Please understand I'm not judging you. That was how we survived, being small. Not making noise, not taking resources. It's not adaptive because it's a narrative that's not true. Any higher power, any quantum physics, by definition, because you're here, believes that you are worthy. God doesn't, you know, the universe doesn't create junk. You are all the only version of you that will ever experience or ever exist in all of time. How could you, in any way, shape, manner, or form, be less than and not deserve the loving activities that you can do for yourself today to enrich yourself and foster your growth? There's a false narrative there. So we have to look at that in step four. And we have to ask ourselves, why am I telling myself these stories? Or, more importantly, what we'll write down on step four is we'll make a list of anger, resentment, fears, and then whomever we give this to in step five, you'll hear, wait a minute, there's a bigger story here. Let's take a look at these things that happened to you as a kid and how they informed that narrative. When I first started talking about the trauma that I survived, and oh my God, the shame and blame that were on the shoulders of a 12-year-old. And my therapist sent me, he's like, I want you to go to school. I want you to go to your kids' elementary school, and I want you to watch those kids get on the bus. And I want you to come back and tell me that you would blame any of them for what happened to you as a child. Whole shift in paradigm that came out of a step five. Whole unraveling this narrative of I'm not good enough, I don't deserve, no one's going to want me. So then there's another really important aspect that would go in this inventory. And that is an understanding of what self-love is. And I mentioned that earlier, that I know when I first came in the rooms, I just wanted someone to love me. And I didn't believe that it was possible that anybody could. But I was just desperate for someone to love and validate me. And so I had this misperception that self-love was about this warm, or any love for that matter, was this warm, fuzzy feeling inside that I was being safe and protected and everything was going to be okay. And someone would recognize my worth and value. And it was quite sobering to find out what an illusion that was. To have to surrender the idea that because I'm an adult today, because I was an adult when I first came in, those days of being loved like a child and cared for like a child and having someone meet my needs like a child were over. And that if I wanted to have any of those feelings, if I wanted to bring light and life into my life, I was responsible for that and no one else. And in the fifth step, this conversation of having that presented to me, do you understand, Elizabeth, that you're in some of these relationships where you are just trying to get people who are not capable of loving you to love you? And then you're tying your worth and value to their distorted perceptions. Do you see how dysfunctional that is? Can you recognize that it's possible for you to navigate this process and learn to love yourself regardless of what anybody else says or does? So there was this level of accountability that had to come in to this conversation, that I had to become fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions when it came to the idea of loving myself. I also had to accept, and again, this is a fifth step conversation. I also had to accept that self-love, learning how to love myself in a healthy, functional way, was hard work. And it meant I had to go to places that frightened me. And I had to be unsettled. I had to accept these really uncomfortable feelings Well, I was walking this process through, and I'll explain that because I had to do that today, 30 minutes before this meeting, and step into, a demonstration of self-love, even though everything in my body is screaming, "Holy shit, we're gonna die," because I know that the growth occurs not when I stay in this place of things as they are and keeping it together. That self-love occurs, it grows, it's fertilized. When I lean in and do things that I know are the right thing for me to do, but that make me epically uncomfortable. And a lot of that, certainly for today, has to do with having a voice. I know from what I saw in the on the screen when I joined, is that there are a lot of women on or individuals that identify as female that are on the call. I know for me that one of the most self-loving things I could do was to not be a doormat anymore. And like I said, my professional life was what a week. But bringing my voice, standing in my truth, not accepting unacceptable behavior is a lot of self-love. And holy crap, it's uncomfortable. But I laughed this morning because I get a daily text from a rehab, doesn't matter which one. And the text today was, "It took me quite a long time to develop a voice, and now that I have it, I am not going to be silent." What a manifestation of self-love. That I am going to stay in my authentic voice. I am going to speak my authentic voice in a kind, graceful, dignified way. I am not going to remain in the silence, allowing other people's dysfunction and fear of what might happen next govern my choices. So, this conversation about what self-love looks like. Yes, it absolutely is a massage and manicure, pedicure. Hey, I need to going away next week. I might need a new interview suit. So I'm going to run and I'm going to do a very loving thing and update my wardrobe. All good. But it's so much bigger than that. Self-love is about having real boundaries. One of the things, I was listening to the conversation earlier. One of the most powerful things that I learned, I was about 5 years into my recovery and my life exploded. And somebody said to me as I was sharing at a meeting, they were like, "Double the number of people you sponsor. Get on that phone, work this process because that will change you." And they were so right that over the 20 plus years that I've been doing that, I've had to contend with learning how to set boundaries. People who want to call 5 minutes before or 5 minutes after, expectations, tolerating, a conversation about everything but what the phone call is supposed to be about. Amazing boundary setting activity. Amazing boundary setting work. Recognizing that most people come into the rooms with a sense of very, very low self-esteem, and the gift that comes back when we put the effort in to do the service is that I may never look in the mirror and feel like I am the most esteemable person in the world, but it's really hard for me to tolerate or accept that voice that can start to play when I have the people around me saying, "Holy crap, you saved my life. I am so grateful for the gift of you. Your life has changed mine in such an incredibly positive way." It's really hard to hate yourself when that happens. So this understanding that this is work, this understanding that this is fostering meaningful spiritual growth on a daily basis in those annoying sponsee phone calls that we have to make to our sponsor every day when we think we've got it going on, That's where the magic begins. That's where I get this conversation of a daily fifth step, right? Here's what happened. I tell the people that I sponsor that they're so unlucky because they're doing steps 4 through 9 every single day. So it sounds like this. How was your day yesterday? And the conversation starts, and we're right into, all right, anger, resentment, fear, harm, expectations. Okay, what are the character defects that are associated with that? So, what are the character defects that are associated with not loving oneself? What are they? They're fear of rejection and abandonment. Number one, fear of rejection and abandonment. Control. Number two, low esteem, self-loathing, self-delusion. What else would be on that initial inventory? Oh, expectations for others. Love that one. Catastrophizing, negative projections. Oh my God, this always happens to me. It's just gonna be this way forever. So what I would call is a negative explanatory style. All of those things go on to this list. Distortions about what love is. Conversation about not having choice or I have to go. Everybody expects that I'm going to be there. I have to go. No, you do not have to go. Your fear of rejection and abandonment, of judgment, ooh, that's another good one to put in there, is what's motivating you to be a victim. I have to go. Instead of recognizing that you have a choice as to whether or not you will go. There's no have to. So you can make this list of character defects, and if you Google on the internet, just Google AA or OA character defects, and you'll come up with a very helpful list of about 195, where you can go through and you can look at self-hatred. That was a coping mechanism. That was a way that I survived in my parents' household. I kept myself small. I didn't challenge authority. Oh, silence. I kept myself quiet. Didn't push anybody's buttons. So I create that list and I become very aware. Stay in that reality that this is all a narrative you're telling yourself. And that what is standing between you and loving yourself is not other people. It's yourself. All of these old coping mechanisms that the 12-step room refers to as character defects, all of these behaviors that we learned along the way to try to survive by throwing ourselves in front of a bus for other people. You know, I'm going to do everything in my power to try to make it okay for you, not realizing that in my desperation to try to get you to recognize me, honor me, and validate me, that I am diminishing myself in order to save your life. Oh, another good one on that character defect list is self-sabotage. That is the one that I have to pay attention to this week as I'm navigating what's going on in my life. Self-sabotage. How I will get in my own way because I'm afraid and I can't tolerate what is going on. And I don't have a higher power that's big enough to contend with this. So I will harm the process myself rather than have to tolerate the discomfort. So you put all these things together, you recognize all these things. You have to live into an idea now that, going back to step two, that the universe is abundant and that your higher power has a beautiful plan for you. And if you don't have a higher power that you believe in, even quantum physics, if the force of nature is your higher power and you don't believe that the force of nature is out there working to your best interest, that God, collective God, whatever the word is the rapid efflux of good reorganizing itself. That everything is designed for your growth and your welfare, then you're not going to do anything. So, in order to get to this place of being able to take care of yourself, you have to believe that there is a power out there that believes in you enough for you to be able to let go of all of these defects of character and live into who you want to be. Now, I'm going to just really quickly tell you about what's going on, because this is going to be really helpful for me, given the week I have coming up next week. And I'm going to illustrate for you how you demonstrate this self-care. That, so I have a leadership position in an organization. I bring lots of money to a philanthropic cause that gives me an opportunity to help a lot of people in another domain of health. And the teams that I run are very successful and have been making a lot of positive financial change for the organization, but also positive social change. And on Monday, I got a phone call from the CEO telling me that effective November 1st, I have a new job. And that he made these decisions to change what needs to change. And it's effective November 1st, and all these decisions were made for me. And I just have to accept that. That was a little hard to take, for a lot of reasons. And I have to go through this process this week of determining what does self-care look like for me? And it doesn't look like someone in a dysfunctional system making a dysfunctional decision and me accepting that on face value. So I've had to go through, a series of processes this week to do exactly what I am telling you to do here in order to establish the boundaries that work for me, regardless of the perceived risk of what might happen. That I have to believe, I have to understand that, in the past, I would have just accepted all of this without a fight because no one's going to hire me. All this thing, these things that have happened, it really isn't my work. It's somebody else doing it. I'm really not that capable. I'm really not that smart. I'm really not able to move all these things. I don't know if that message resonates for all of you, but that's what lives in my head. Okay. You're an imposter. If anybody really knew who you are, no one would believe that all of this success was driven by, your higher power through your efforts, right? So I have to work on all of those same character defects that I named earlier to step back and say, all right, all of those voices, all of that narrative, all of that, I want to make myself small to avoid confrontation and conflict. That's another one to put on that list. Conflict aversion and avoidance, absolutely another one to go on that list. And I have to face a terrific fear that if I challenge this, I'll be fired. Small issue, right? No matter how realistic or unrealistic that is, that's the fear that's waving a big flag in my head right now. So I have to believe that I have an awesome, amazing higher power. I have to believe that God is doing for me what I cannot do for myself in this situation. Some of you may realize that that statement is from page 84 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Suddenly realize that God is doing for me what I cannot do for myself. This is spiritual sandpaper. This is the opportunity for Elizabeth to show to herself what she believes her worth and value to be. This is for Elizabeth, who never had anyone advocate for her as a child, to step in and advocate for herself, no matter how frightened she is, no matter how uncomfortable she is, no matter how uncertain this all looks at the moment. And in order to do that, I have to go through an inventory to sort out where the truth is, what the truth is, what's actually going on, contend with the anger, the hurt, the disbelief, the confusion, the craziness, getting on the phone with human resources and having two people in this meeting supposedly talking about this transition, having two different opinions about what my new job is going to be. A little confusing, a little upsetting. I've got to sort through all of that to find God, to get settled into this understanding that this is my higher power acting in my life in a constructive, positive way to help me move my life forward toward what I want for myself. And it is a high form of love to operationalize that. To step back and say, red flag is waving. All of these character defects are painted on my eyeballs saying, duck, run. Don't challenge, just accept. Don't wake waves. They're all going to hate you. No one's going to want you. Put all of that into my higher power's hands and begin to work on step seven, where I humbly ask my higher power to remove these defects of character in the belief that doing the most loving thing for myself will always be God's will for me. So, I do this thing called the seven-step letter. I have my list of character defects from step six, and you can use this on any aspect of advancing self-love in your life. Whatever's standing in your way, even if it is, I don't feel like I deserve a massage, or I don't feel like I deserve to eat at this restaurant, or I don't feel like I deserve whatever. This will work no matter what that barrier is. Make a list of those character defects that are standing in the way of you believing with all your heart that the universe is abundant and that your higher power has a beautiful plan for you. And then step back and say, who do I want to be? Because you see, I have this awesome, amazing higher power. She's rocked my world for almost 30 years now. She wants me to co-create with her. My higher power wants me to express what I feel inside is important for me because that's my higher power speaking. So, who do I want to be in relationship to this? Do I want to accept unacceptable behavior? I'm in a leadership role of the organization. There are no performance issues related here because I asked. They just decided to make a change to make me more effective because they want me to bring more money in. And they didn't bother to ask me about what would work or what wouldn't. Who do I want to be? Well, I want to be sober in my decision making. I want to be emotionally sober. I want to be able to be spiritually guided instead of emotionally driven. I want to be grounded in the truth. I want to be unafraid. I want to believe that my higher power is walking this journey with me. I want to stay in faith, and I want to stay in my authentic voice. I want to ensure that anything that comes out of this is in my best interest, not the CEO's best interest or the best interest of the organization. my best interest. And so I write a seven-step letter. I spend some time reflecting on how will it feel? How will it feel 3 weeks from now for me to be in a place of knowing that I stood up for myself, regardless of where this goes? How will I feel 3 weeks from now knowing that I did what was best for me? How will I feel 3 weeks from now, knowing that I spoke truth to power? How will I feel about that? How will I feel about, knowing that I could look back, oh, because next week I'm going to be in San Diego with all of these people in a room with them for 4 days, 8 hours a day. How will I feel when I walk out of there, knowing that that was navigated with grace and dignity? Knowing that I'm able to look back and be proud of my behavior no matter what. Knowing that I'm not personalizing any of this. This is not about me. This is about the dysfunction within the organization. Able to stay in that place of objectivity, recognizing that the God of my understanding is doing for me what I cannot do for myself. Knowing that the 10 people that I reached out to yesterday to say, hey, I might need a reference in the not too distant future. We're all, you aren't leaving this work. And oh my God, just tell me. And a couple of them were like, oh, I can find some jobs for you. How does that feel? And then write that into a conversation with my higher power as if all of this has already happened. Thanking God in advance for carrying me through. Thank my higher power for removing all of the false narrative in my head, telling me that I don't deserve this, that this isn't where I should be, that there's something that I did that was wrong, that I made, removing that whole false narrative and putting me in the position of being able to stay grounded in the truth, no matter how badly someone tries to gaslight me, staying in this place of objectivity and equanimity. Going up with the water and down with the water and not fighting the water's superior power. Staying in this grace and knowing that no matter what happens here, my life will be better for it as I'm living into a very high form of self-care, maintaining my boundaries. You aren't going to change my job and give me more responsibility without a job description, a discussion of compensation and a new title. That is self-care. It's not a massage, but it absolutely is spiritual growth. Because as I go through that letter and I start thanking God in advance for helping me navigate this incredibly, ooh, uncomfortable week that I potentially am walking through next week. I can do it with this understanding that my higher power is giving me spiritual sandpaper, rubbing off that self-hatred, removing those defects of character as I am living my way through this. So when we translate this into step eight, when we look at this through that lens, made a list of all persons we had harmed today and became willing to make amends to them all. I got to be on that list every single day, every single day, because the person that I harm most is me by not having the boundaries that I might have, by not investing in the things that I need to invest in, by not stepping back and recharging my batteries, by going to a hardware store, going to emotionally unavailable people, looking for their affirmation and love. Every time I have no illusions about how the team at the organization that I've worked at for 10 years apparently perceive my value. Every time I get into a conversation of believing that false narrative, I am harming me. Every time that voice pops into my head But, come on, Elizabeth, do you really deserve this? That's me harming me. Every time that I tolerate unacceptable behavior, because putting up those boundaries and telling people who are not treating us with respect that there's an issue here, that's a high form of self-love. You will not speak to me in that manner. I say that to my sponsees on a regular basis. Nope, gonna call me back when we can have a conversation as adults. See ya, click. All right. I won't tolerate because I'm not harming me. So the amends is to live into that seven-step letter. The amends is to live into that active understanding of the God of your understanding and how that higher power, whatever that is, relishes in every single cell of your being right now. Everyone, one day at a time, making the 10th step live, getting on the phone with our sponsors and our sponsees and having a conversation about, wow, that's amazing progress. Look at how differently you're engaging in your own life and ensuring that your needs are being met in a healthy, adaptive way. And then living into this understanding that prayer and meditation and this idea of knowing what God's will is for us minute to minute. I have to learn, right? Step 11 is an active process, and it's not once a day. I promise you, I will be going through this next week saying, okay, God, now what? About a million times, trying to navigate this all this rough water that's around me without a compass, and some days it feels like without a sail. Okay, God, here's the dynamic that I'm in right now. I'm going to take the voice, right? My disease, which I refer to as Ethel. I am going to tell Ethel, thank you for your opinion, but I don't agree, and sort of put her in a timeout while I'm sitting in a meeting and listening to what I need to listen to in order to find my higher power's will for me in those conversations one day at a time. And I know that by staying in step 10, recognizing that the minute that I'm agitated, the minute that I am agitated, the minute that I'm out of that, what talked about on page 85 of the big book, that position of neutrality, safe and protected, the minute that I'm out of that feeling like God's got it, I have work to do. Because if I'm agitated, I'm back being emotionally driven instead of spiritually guided. So now we circle back to the second most self-loving thing you can do is to develop your self-awareness and mindfulness. So
I've been
that, got it? As you walk this through, you stay in this place of being connected to what is going on inside you, so that what's going on inside you doesn't come out in a way that will harm you. And that's the beauty of the 12 steps and the opportunity to work this process every single day. Third most self-loving thing you can do is get invested in understanding that the steps are not something you do. A design for living that works in rough going is how Bill W. presented it. The steps are something you become. It becomes the foundation for your decision making. Ooh, I'm getting angry here. I can't function when I don't function well when I'm angry. I'm going to do what I need to do to accept the fact that things are the way that they are. I'm going to adapt to that, and I'm going to take the actions that then protect me as I go forward. And then do service. Forget about what service does for other people. We are all, by definition, page 62 or 64 in the big book, I can never remember, selfish, self-centered, driven by 100 forms of fear and self-delusion. That's who we are. That's the definition of the foundation of addiction. I can't heal a disease of selfishness with more selfishness. I can only heal it through selflessness. So I have to get involved in this idea of bringing sharing with other people, because the beauty of it is that when I bring myself to that conversation, the other person may not change, but I certainly will. I will learn about myself. Like I said earlier, I'll learn about boundaries. I'll get very clear on who I am, where I am, what I am doing as a result of being service to others. So this isn't all about just, being, what's the word that I'm altruistic. This is about the process of service changing us. And I'll just end by saying this, that had this really miserable day on Monday. One of my sponsees called me and I'm like, I think today is the day you should think about this topic. So she calls me back on Tuesday after all this stuff happened. And out of her mouth comes every freaking thing that I needed to hear to get my feet back on the ground, because I sent her to go off in one direction and she came back around and then in our 15-minute phone call said everything I needed to get myself grounded back in reality. I wouldn't have that if I wasn't in this process of saying, I know that I'm going to grow as I move through this. I am going to be able to increase the self-love that I have in my life as I'm working with others. So I hope this was helpful, and I really appreciate the opportunity to share on this topic. And I look forward to any questions, comments that you might have. My phone number is on my Zoom, Hollywood Squares, so please feel free to reach out. Thanks so much, guys.